Hey, Lulu here. Whether we are romping through science, music, politics, technology, or feelings, we seek to leave you seeing the world anew. Radiolab adventures right on the edge of what we think we know, wherever you get podcasts.
I'm Tanzina Vega, and this is The Takeaway. It's been 5 years since the Flint water crisis was thrust into the national spotlight, and the city is still struggling to deal with the public health crisis. Children who were born prior to or during the crisis are now in school, but the number of young students who require special education for physical or mental health needs is greatly outpacing the resources available. And many people are blaming the contaminated water for the rising rate of special education students in the district. Here to tell us what the situation looks like today is Corey Mitchell, a staff writer at Education Week, and Bill Therrien, a special education professor at the University of Virginia. Corey, Bill, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you.
Corey, let's start with you. In your reporting, you show that 1 in 5 students in Flint's public schools is now eligible for special education. That's an increase from years prior. When did people start looking into this? Was this spawned by the Flint water crisis? What were some of the warning signs?
I think it was a lawsuit by the ACLU of Michigan, the Education Law Center, and some others starting to look at children affected by this and wondering what was going on, whether the district was able to support them. And that spawned all these questions about the lead and how it was affecting these young people.
And when we say that the children are eligible for special education, what does that mean exactly? How are our children being measured for that?
At this point, it's a lot of the district's assessment of needs, diagnosis of ADHD, of autism, and children could be blind and a number of other things have learning delays. So we're talking a wide range of things here, just not solely learning disabilities, but that is a big part as well.
Were people expecting this change to happen? Because we've heard about this story, as we said, for 5 years. So I'm wondering if officials, local officials, were prepared for an influx of children who might have been affected in some way by this crisis.
I'm sure that people were bracing, but there's no way that you can really prepare for what's happened there. I mean, the special education rate in the district was somewhere around 14%. Pre-crisis. Now it's at least 20%, 1 in 5 kids. And when you take a school district that was already in distress and sort of add the loss of students that's come with the lead crisis, you're basically putting these children and their parents in a situation where the school district can do not nearly enough to meet their needs.
Bill, when we talk about the impact or the effect that lead has on the health of children, in terms of both neurological and behavioral exposure, what are some of the signs?
Well, in a school environment, what we notice primarily is decreases in academic achievement. There's also pretty extensive evidence for a lower IQ, attention difficulties, difficulties with executive function, and then non-academic behavior. So we see things like impulsivity, aggression, inattention, conduct disorder. So there's pretty extensive evidence that show impacts of lead poisoning in school-based environments.
And does it matter or does the effect change depending on the age of the child?
So research shows that kids are most susceptible to lead poisoning between the ages of 2 and 7. But what's insidious about lead is oftentimes we don't see the effects until much later in life. So upper elementary school, middle school, and high school, where the cognitive demands are much higher. So we often don't see the effects from a school-based perspective until much later.
Corey, you talked a little bit about how the school district in Flint is already under a lot of pressure and because of the lack of resources. But we have to ask now, with 1 in 5 students being impacted by lead poisoning, whether or not the resources in the school are going to be enough. I mean, are they equipped to bring in professionals who are able to deal with the not just the physical manifestations of this poisoning, but also the behavioral manifestations?
To this point, they have not. You know, we talk about that at 1 in 5 number, but roughly 1 in 4 of the teachers that they have in classrooms with these students aren't certified to work with students with special needs. They're hiring long-term substitutes and contract workers to deal with these students who have very demanding needs. And plenty of the parents that I talked to in Flint are just concerned that just because you have someone in front of them doesn't mean that you're helping them.
Bill, when we talk about what if these students don't get the support that they need now, what are the consequences for learning and educational attainment as they get older?
There's going to be significant consequences. There's been a lot of research that shows there's higher dropout rates. Individuals aren't going to be attaining the social skills and the behavioral skills they need to be successful in vocational settings. And they're often not going to acquire those basic academic skills, those reading, writing, and mathematics skills they need to be successful in life.
I want to ask both of you your thoughts on the fact that this isn't unique to Flint. We've seen elevated levels of lead in water, and even a colleague of ours here at WNYC did a big expose on lead paint in schools here in New York City. So we're seeing that in Newark and Pittsburgh and New York City. Are you concerned about the effect that this will have nationally on a generation of children right now? Bill, your thoughts?
Yes, I'm very worried about it. You make a perfect and wonderful and unfortunate point that this is going to be a concern throughout the nation. And we really need to make a concerted effort, not only in Flint, but in these other communities, because there's thousands of communities that are dealing with lead, whether it's lead in the soil or lead in the paint or lead in the water. And it's going to impact children and their education for sure.
Corey, your thoughts as an education reporter when you see this playing out in cities across the country?
We should be very concerned. We think that, you know, we can blame, you know, some of these issues on a home environment or poor parenting when many of these students may be suffering from lead poisoning and in classrooms or in situations where people don't understand what's causing them to act out in class, what's causing these behavior issues, what's, you know, causing these learning delays or executive functioning issues when, I mean, it's a very insidious and thing that's sort of hiding in plain sight.
Bill Therrien is a special education professor at the University of Virginia, and Corey Mitchell is a staff writer at Education Week. Thanks to you both.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
We're now joined by two parents with children in Flint's school system, Brittany Thomas and Melissa Mays. Thanks to you both for joining us.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Melissa, we'll start with you. What was your child experiencing in the past few years?
Well, my kids were doing great. They had actually, my oldest had tested into a dual enrollment high school to where he was taking college classes and high school classes at the same time. So he was working very hard, doing well. And then the water crisis hit and he started having problems with his memory, concentration, focus. And by the time he hit his junior year of high school, he was almost ready to fail. But the fact that my kids, we decided to move them from Flint schools because of the issues to a smaller school just outside the district, it was small enough to where they caught this and he got a tutor. Same thing with my youngest. He started having speech problems, started losing some of his words, and the school caught it. So we were lucky. However, the families I work with on my caseload, their kids go to Flint schools, and right now their kids are having the same struggles as my children. They have memory loss. They have trouble handling their anger, making decisions, focusing. Their executive functioning is slower, so they're having a harder time processing information. But yet in Flint schools, no one's doing IEPs. No one's, assessing these kids to see that what their needs are. They're just ignoring it and pushing these kids through or kicking them out.
Brittany, tell me about what your children or child has experienced over the past few years.
My daughter, she was just normal until one day she just all of a sudden fell out and just started having seizures out the blue. Like, she never had no seizure or anything up until just 2 years ago. And like Melissa also said about her child, like the memory loss, they're losing their memory. She's failing in school. They don't want to do no IEPs for her. And like my son as well. I've been dealing with him since 1.5 with seizures, and it's just getting worse. It's not getting no better. for neither one of them.
And Brittany, you've had to take time off to deal with this, right, from work?
No, I didn't take time off. I actually lost my job. I didn't lost like four or five jobs within the last couple months with my daughter by her being admitted in the hospital, or she got to miss school, or she's getting kicked out of school for her behavior, which she don't understand what's going on with her seizures. So they finally just realized, like, okay, this is medical.
What has been the cost for you, Brittany, in terms of time and money? I mean, you said you got, you've lost a number of jobs because of this. What has been the financial and the time cost for you so far?
It cost a lot. Like, I'm falling behind in bills. I got to borrow money from people. It's hard. It's a struggle. It's a struggle.
Melissa, when it comes to the increase in lead-associated health impacts, what are teachers able to do at this point? And if you could explain for our listeners also, what are IEPs?
So when it comes to, you know, properly supporting kids in school, they have to do an IEP, an individualized education plan, which says, okay, here's the struggles, here's your challenges, and here's how we're going to work with you around them. And it basically helps kids who are having issues be able to learn in their own way. And this is great. And that's why these exist. These IEPs exist for special education. However, when you don't have enough teachers in the school, when you don't have properly trained teachers, when you don't have enough autism services, supports, things like that in the school system, the teachers are left to basically try to teach special needs children and regular education children, and even regular education children with behavioral issues in a large classroom. You've got one teacher for like 30 some kids, and you're not able to give these kids the individual attention they need. So what happens is it seems like they're acting out, or they're not paying attention, or the kids are just, you know, being quote unquote bad kids. So they get kicked out, when in the all actuality, what's happening is that they don't know how to learn in the way that you're teaching them. But then the teachers have no support because there's no money there. Nobody's even bothering to invest into Flint schools. It's just like they're waiting for them to crumble so they can push all the kids out to, you know, private schools or charter schools if the kids can afford it. And if not, what happens then?
Brittany, when you hear Melissa say that, is that reflective of how you feel as a parent who still has her children in the Flint school system? Do you feel like the schools are not doing enough to address what your children are dealing with right now?
Yes, I do. And I feel like the whole school system is failing my kids right now because they're not getting the proper help that they need or anything. And then I feel like y'all just throw them up in the next grade. No, they really need help.
And what kind of help do you think they need, Brittany? I mean, what kind of help would help you and your children specifically?
Like, I mean, if I got more help with the school system, like them working with my kids, because it's like how the school system is. It's like two teachers in a room. I feel like they just there. They there to get a paycheck. They don't really care if our students fail, pass, or anything.
Melissa, when you hear this, do you see any hope for what the parents in Flint who aren't able to move their kids out of the school district right now to put them in charter schools or get them the additional support that they need, who can't afford to do that, as we're hearing from Brittany right now? Are you hopeful for any change in the future? Is anyone accountable for this?
Right now, no one is accountable. I mean, the ACLU filed the lawsuit and, you know, the school system on the city, county and state level said, oh, yeah, yeah, we'll fix this. We'll work on it. I mean, it has been 5.5 years since the water crisis began. And it's been several years since this was blown up all over the place, gone into the courts. And yet still here we are going into year 6 of our crisis and no one's doing what they need to be doing. So it's still the same thing to where the school systems are kicking the kids out instead of giving them the supports. They are cutting teachers. They are cutting funding. They're cutting after school programs, support programs. They're cutting instead of putting the support in. I don't know where the money's going, but it's not going to support our kids. So the best we can do is what we've had to do since day one. All of the parents and activists got to stand together and yell and scream for help. Be like, hey, our kids are failing. Our whole future is at risk right now. And you guys are doing nothing. And you should have been stepping this up as soon as you heard there was lead in the water, because you know how it affects children. So I don't have hope in people doing the right thing. I have hope in the people themselves standing up in forcing these officials to do the right thing.
Brittany, you're a parent there. You have children who are directly being affected by what's happened with the water in Flint. What do you want to say to officials, whether that's at the school board, the state, federal, or local level? What do you want to say? What do you want to ask them for?
I don't know, like, because it's just so much. It's so much. And, like, I deal with so much on the day-to-day basis. And, I mean, it's just a lot. First of all, they need to get it together, period. It's been 5.5 years, going on 6 years, and nothing haven't been done. It's time for somebody to just step up and do something. Our community failing us. Our school system failing us. The job system failing us. You don't have nobody. You can't look forward to nothing, really. We have nothing.
Brittany Thomas is a parent of school children in Flint, Michigan. And Melissa Mays is a parent social worker and founder of the advocacy group Water You Are Fighting For. Thank you both for sharing your experiences with us.
Thank you.
Thank you.